The contents of the lab report are meant for educational purposes only. They are not meant to be misconstrued as medical diagnosis or treatment advice.
Today on the lab report, we're going to talk to Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson.
We are going to discuss pentadecanoic acid,
otherwise known as fatty 15, yes. And she worked with dolphins.
Right?
How cool.
The world of medicine can be challenging. Clinicians and patients are always looking for more options, more effective treatments, and in the end, more answers. Functional and integrative medicine focuses on addressing root causes of disease. Here at Genova Diagnostics, we've watched this field evolve and grow for over 35 years. We've not only adapted, we've led. Join us as we talk about functional medicine, laboratory testing, and optimizing health. Welcome to the Lab Report.
So it's settled.
But
it's been legally settled.
What?
A taco is now legally a sandwich.
What?
Hello!
Hi, Michael Chapman. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Patty Devers. How are you today?
My mind is blown. I don't know where this has been legally settled, but I need to know more
we'll
right now.
We'll get there. But before we do, this is a podcast. It's called The Lab Report, and it's brought to you by Genova Diagnostics. Thank you to Genova.
Thank you.
It's where we talk about things like functional medicine, specialty lab testing, integrative therapeutic, and apparently sandwiches.
Tacos. Well, if you like tacos that are now apparently officially sandwiches, then you have come to the right podcast. If you're new, welcome. If you're returning, thank you so much, as always, for your support. Maybe go to iTunes or Spotify and follow the show, rate, review, share with your friends, all that good stuff.
That is good stuff. Other good stuff can be sent to feedback at GDX.
Nope.
Gah! What is my run rate with that? It's got
know.
Like 1 in 100, 1 in 20. I don't
so
know why.
Funny.
It just seems right. Can we change the email address to feedback at GDX? It's because it's just, it'd make my life easier. Podcast at GDX.net
yes.
is
you.
The email address.
Thank you.
Maybe we should at least have a fallback email.
Maybe we should. But if you're a consumer out there interested in performing Genova's tests yourself and checking out what we do here, head on over to Genova Connect. That's connect.gdx.net. There you can access our testing yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And we can help connect you with a healthcare practitioner to help guide your healthcare.
And we have a special Memorial Day sale. It is a discount code for you. It's called, you just type it in as a promo code. You know how those things work.
It's
called, type in the Lab Report 20, and you will get 20% off anything on Genova Connect.
Okay, all that housekeeping out of the way. What in the world are you talking about? There being an official ruling on this sandwich taco issue. What are you talking about?
So there was a district court judge somewhere in Indiana, I think around.
Figures,
yeah,
Indiana.
Right. And so they had to determine the legal case was whether, in fact, a taco is considered a sandwich or not.
Why? What was why did
so
it have to
be determined?
So
there was some sort of issue where this owner who had a bunch of local taco restaurants, taco stores, he was trying to open up a new shop in this neighborhood, but the neighborhood had signed some sort of agreement that the only type of restaurants that would be available in that area were Subway-style sandwich restaurants. And so his argument was like,
wow.
Hey, a taco is basically a made-to-order
wow.
sandwich, which is what he was doing. And so he sued. It went to the court, and the judge ruled that, yes, a taco is legally a Mexican-style sandwich, as is a burrito. And I think it's case closed on that. I think he got it right. And we can move on from this discussion.
I feel like this is a big deal. I feel like this should have been bigger news, you know?
Well, it was all over my news feeds. I don't know what's wrong with your algorithm. It was like the top story.
You're from Indiana, that's why.
They got me.
Okay, well, enough of that taco sandwich talk. We have an important guest today, and I'm super excited to talk to her, Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. We've known Stephanie for a bit of time, and she is the co-founder of the company Fatty 15, which is bringing supplements to the market, a very specific type of supplement, which is a fatty acid marker, hence the Fatty 15. And we're going to talk all about this pentadecanoic acid, its clinical utility, what you can do from an evaluation standpoint. And we're super excited about this because we have also been measuring pentadecanoic acid on our lab testing for quite some time and are cooking together some fun things for the future. So, let's just have an awesome, fun chat.
Michael Chapman.
I can't wait.
Finally, Dr. Stephanie is here.
I know, right?
I know. So let us introduce you to our friend, Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson. Dr. Stephanie Venn Watson is co-founder and CEO of Serafina Therapeutics, a health and wellness company that translates groundbreaking discoveries to consumer products that help people live healthier, longer. Stephanie is a veterinary epidemiologist and nerdy do-gooder who, while caring for aging Navy dolphins, discovered C15 pentadecanoic acid as the first essential fatty acid to be found in over 90 years. Stephanie previously served as an epidemiologist for the World Health Organization and U.S. Navy, right?
Wow.
I know. With over 60 patents and 80 peer-reviewed scientific publications.
That's just a bit.
I know. Steph's novel approach to discovering nutrient-based therapeutics has been featured on NPR's Science Friday, CBS, BBC, and National Geographic, as well as a featured TEDx talk.
I've heard of those things.
I know, me too. Stephanie has been awarded the Department of Health and Human Services Secretary's Award for Innovations in Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, and Boehringer Ingelheim's Innovation Award. Serafina won Nutritional Outlook Magazine's Best of the Industry Award, as well as having been recognized as a Fast Company world-changing idea for bringing its pure C15 ingredient to the world.
Nice.
Stephanie received her BS in Animal Physiology and Neuroscience from UC San Diego. MPH from Emory University and her DVM from Tufts University. Hello.
This is ridiculous.
I know. And was a National Research Council Associate with the Armed Forces Medical Intelligence Center. She is an Albert Schweitzer Fellow for Life. My gosh. And with that, welcome to our show,
Thank you, Dr. Stephanie. So much for being here.
Wow. Well, thank you, Patty and Michael. I don't think I can live up to that person, so might as well talk baseball or something.
Nice. No, I mean, it is clear from the standpoint of publishing over 80 papers that you're a super smarty pants.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
And I do want to start by going back just a little bit in your career, because this is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about how you got into veterinary epidemiology and what was it like working with Navy dolphins?
Yeah.
Yeah, not your typical intro. Right?
No.
Into the world. So yeah, I I was planning on going to medical school, and I read Lori Garrett's The Coming Plague, and it was about epidemiology. And I am a super duper nerd at heart and into pattern recognition, like since I was a little kid.
Wow. Yeah.
Not good at anything else, but pattern recognition, I could do that. Don't ask me to ride a bike or play the triangle. I could recognize patterns. So when I, really got turned on to epidemiology, I thought, oh my gosh, tracking down diseases, like this is fascinating. And so I then got connected to a person who was a veterinary epidemiologist.
Whoa.
And they said, hey, Steph, if you want to understand disease, like really understand how it works, don't go to human medical school because you'll learn diseases in one species.
Mm.
Go to veterinary school and you'll learn what the same disease does in 8 or 10 different species.
Interesting.
And you really understand health and disease. So I thought, oh, awesome. So to veterinary school I went to become a veterinary epidemiologist.
Mm. I never thought about that.
And dolphins too. I mean,
yeah.
Specifically, what was like... I just imagine like SeaWorld, right? And I see dolphins doing tricks and stuff like that. But like, what was it working with dolphins on more of a research front?
And furthermore, the Navy has their own dolphins. Is that what we're saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. What's
yeah,
that like?
I mean, I didn't know that. And so I was, finished all my education. I was working at the CDC, World Health Organization, and then was recruited by the Navy's Marine Mammal Program to say, basically they're like, hey, we'd love to have a veterinary epidemiologist to continually understand, basically continue to help the health and welfare of older Navy dolphins. And I was like, what? And so I said, okay, I don't know how to swim. I hope that's okay. Again, I said, right?
Pattern recognition. Good at that, though.
It's the savants, the one savant. And so they're like, yeah, you don't have to know how to swim. And so I, went to San Diego and I thought, well, gosh, I'll be there for a couple of years. That'll be fun to do. And ended up staying there for 20 years, Michael and Patty.
Wow.
So it was amazing. So the Navy dolphins, they've cared for this population of dolphins for over 60 years. They've had a sustained population of about 100 bottlenose dolphins. And what's so wonderful is they live in San Diego Bay. So they don't, a lot of people think about dolphins living in pools at the Navy, they live in the bay. And when I went down there for the first time, I didn't really know how I'd feel about dolphins at the Navy, but they go out to the open ocean, they swim every day they choose to come back. it's just an amazing program. And the only reason it works is because these animals get incredibly good care. And as a wonderful side effect of that good care, they live a lot longer than dolphins in the wild. So dolphins in the wild live to about 20 years old. Dolphins in the Navy routinely live into their 40s and even 50s.
Wow. So, yeah, cool. It's amazing
experience.
Okay, well, in addition to it being an amazing experience, while you were studying these dolphins, you discovered C15, pentadecanoic acid. Tell us a little bit about this discovery and what was intriguing about it that you decided to focus more specifically on C15.
Right. I mean, we weren't, it was an accident, which is fun when discoveries happen.
Yeah.
By accident. But we had, as the Navy dolphin populations, they were getting more and more older dolphins. We started seeing that these dolphins, some but not all, were getting diseases similar to some but not all of us as we get older. So this includes things like high cholesterol and chronic inflammation, fatty liver disease, even Alzheimer's.
Wow.
So it was just this amazing, and this is happening to them naturally because, like us, they're large brain, long-lived mammals. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens us when we're allowed to get old enough.
Uh-huh.
So what was fascinating was that because some dolphins were getting these conditions and others weren't, we were then able to use an advanced technology called metabolomics, where we looked at thousands of small molecules present in the dolphin's blood and their fish diet to basically go and look and see which small molecules predicted the healthiest aging dolphins.
Uh-huh.
So we found about 100 molecules that predicted healthy aging dolphins, but among the top was C15 or pentadecanoic acid. So we were, you know, we had thought dolphins, all dolphins eat are fish. Surely the highest predictor of long and healthy lives will be omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
And omega-3s didn't even make the list.
What?
So, and yet C15 sitting at the top conspicuously, and it's a saturated fat that for us is present in butter. So it was a definitely a surprise.
Wow.
That is a little bit of a shocker. I mean, let's leave the omega-3 part of it aside. That's probably a whole other TED talk, I imagine, right? But what about the C15? So, what is it about C15 in your research that might be contributing to these types of scenarios as far as longevity goes? And is it not just the fact that dolphins are getting high cholesterol from San Diego and just eating In-N-Out Burger all the time, or like what is it about what they're eating or not eating?
Yeah, well, they're Navy dolphins, so it's alcoholic liver. It was interesting. So once we found that association between higher C15 in the dolphins' blood and their diets and healthier aging dolphins, the next thing we did was then basically give dolphins, we figured out that some fish, but not all, had C15 in it in which they were eating. So we gave them a higher C15 fish-based diet, and we saw things like components of metabolic syndrome, like cholesterol and glucose and inflammation, go down in the dolphins. So that was encouraging enough that we said, let's move C15 into the lab. We'll get back to helping the dolphins later. move C15 in the lab and to say, can it stand on its own? So we did 8 studies over 3 years. In which the culmination of that work we published in Scientific Reports in 2020. And that's where we found that C15 isn't just an active and beneficial saturated fat, but that it was meeting the rare criteria of being the first essential fatty acid to be discovered in over 90 years since omega-3.
Wow.
So it's really exciting. We can talk about, you know, exactly what it does.
Well,
I want to clarify one little thing there. So the dolphins are getting C15 from various fish. Humans, you said, get it from butter. I mean, we're going to have to eat a lot of butter in order to get enough. So are there other human dietary sources? And like, why aren't we getting enough of it that we're having diseases? Like, is there more food sources and we just don't know them?
Right. So there are a decent number of food that has a detectable amount of C15 in it. But for decades, C15 has actually been used as a biomarker of how much dairy fat we eat. So it's that reliable of a source for C15 that, you know, it really, really, our primary source is from dairy fat. Even understanding that, if we look at milk fat, that, you know, only 1% of milk fat is C15.
Wow.
So we're talking really tiny amounts present in food that's then complicated by a lot of 400 other fatty acids that are present in milk fat. So it really took the dolphins to help kind of provide a very clean picture that's not, you know, messed up by, you know, what we talked about, different diets and different behaviors and environments and socioeconomic status. It just cleaned it up. And then it ended up that at the same time, there were a lot of studies just starting to come out showing the same thing, that people with higher levels of C15 have lower risk of developing type 2 diabetes, heart disease, fatty liver disease. And all of a sudden, these stories really started, the science really started coming together for both dolphins and humans.
Wow.
Okay, so you mentioned something, the first essential fatty acid to be discovered in 90 years. So that clarification, I just want to make sure people in the audience understand what that means. So essential fatty acid means basically it is something necessary for your body, and it's something that the body cannot make. You have to get it through the diet. Is that accurate? And then what is that criteria that you were saying made C15, I guess, live up to that?
Yeah, you get an A. Essential fatty acid there, good job. Yeah, so we must have it, our body doesn't make it. So the criteria that C15 met were a handful of things. The first is that there is clear evidence that, and we actually now know that people who have lower levels of C15, right, have a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes, heart disease, fatty liver disease. So that's the first criteria. The second is that when C15 levels are raised, so when you raise them through the diet, now we and others have been able to show that you can resolve those issues. So you can, that in relevant models, that are supplemented with C15, it lowers glucose, it lowers cholesterol, it helps with liver health. I'm going to step carefully here with all the things it does. So it helps to reverse these disease processes. So, and then the third is that we know that our bodies don't make enough C15. So there are some bacteria in our gut that can make some C15.
Okay.
And so it's important to have a healthy gut microbiome, but it doesn't really make enough to meet the levels that we have. And we now know, we're now understanding, and we have a paper coming out really soon, within a few weeks, hopefully, in which we're able to define nutritional C15 deficiencies. So if you have lower than 0.2%, that the numerous studies support that this may actually be defined as a nutritional deficiency syndrome. And then from 0.2 to 0.4 being normal, kind of where we're at, and then 0.4 to 0.65 being optimal. Your question with regard to, it's been decreasing because we're decreasing our intake of dairy fat. You know, it's been happening since the 1970s, where we've actually been told to avoid all saturated fats.
Right.
Right. Since the 1970s. So that has been a huge contributor to lower and lower C15 levels. In addition, even people who drink whole fat milk, like me, the amount of C15 in cow's milk is dependent upon what they're fed. So if they're fed corn, they have less C15 than if they're fed grass. And even the season in which the grass that they're fed can influence our C15 levels. And then the last is aging. As we get older, our C15 levels naturally decline.
Okay.
See, this is a good sign, because that means we have so many questions that we're going to fight each other.
I was like, well, I want to get into this a little bit. Like, so C15 is associated with all of these things, but can you talk a little bit about how it relates to that concept of cellular stability? And is that the mechanism by which it's associated with all of these things? So talk a little bit about the cellular stability factor here.
Absolutely. So C15 it's a promiscuous molecule. So it actually has, I know, right? You didn't think fatty acids.
It's exciting.
But it basically, it means it's pleiotropic. It does a lot of things. So we know, for example, that it helps activate important receptors like PPAR alpha and delta and AMPK. It helps inhibit things like JAK-STAT. and mTOR. So there are these kind of core mechanisms of action that we know help to lower inflammation and help to balance our metabolism and maintain homeostasis and support longevity. So that's all great. But where the getting to the point, Patty, of your question, of really where C15's hardest hitting efficacy is that it is a sturdy fatty acid that is in our cell membranes, in which its primary job is to help maintain the stability and the resilience of our cells so that they stay functioning for their entire lives. Because if you don't, what we're finding is if you don't have enough C15 in there, that's where that 0.2% comes in. If you don't have enough, it is your cell is now not stable enough and it starts falling apart because it can get attacked by oxygen. So it's gotten to such an extent that, again, this paper that's coming out shares the hypothesis that C15 nutritional deficiencies are causing cells to become fragile, and it's accelerating aging, which is then contributing to the onset of the diseases we named, of why we're seeing an increase in type 2 diabetes, heart disease, fatty liver disease, especially among younger and younger people. So super fancy words, but in the end, it's just like, it's a brick in our cell membrane that just helps keep them stable. And we need that in order to live a long and healthy life.
Explained.
Is that, absolutely.
That was great.
Is that also particular to like red blood cells, or is that like all of our cells, all of the cell membranes of all of our cells?
It's all of our cells. Where we read, the easiest way to detect it, Michael, very good, is through our red blood cells, right? Right. So you're both smarty pants. Since red blood cells, they readily take up C15 when we increase our ingestion of it, it within a month of increasing C15, those red blood cells are stabilized. And that is easily measurable through some convenient diagnostic tests that, I don't know, people might have access to.
We've heard of it.
Yeah, like a fatty acid test.
Like
maybe.
Perhaps, yep. Right.
Well, okay, and so you've said a couple things that maybe to some of the lay people who might be listening would sound kind of controversial. First and foremost, I thought saturated fats are bad. So can we talk a little bit about why this might not be the case?
Right. So we were part right. The world was part right. So saturated fats, just like we keep learning, right? First, it was all fats are bad. And they're like, oh, okay, but polyunsaturated fats are good and saturated fats are bad. Now it is well documented, way beyond us, that there are two categories of saturated fats. So there are even chain saturated fatty acids like C16, C18, based upon the number of carbons they have. And there are odd chain saturated fats like C15 and C17. And it ends up that the even chain saturated fatty acids, which are present at much higher levels, like 40% of that milk fat that we talked about, are these even chain saturated fats. These are pro-inflammatory fatty acids, higher levels associated with an increased risk of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, fatty liver disease. So they have the opposite effect of the odd chain fatty acids, which are anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, and, you know, again, associated with a lower risk of these diseases. So how nature pulled this off of basically saying 15 good, 16 bad, 17 good, you know, it's incredible. But it is well documented now that these two groups exist, but not a lot of people, you know, have heard about these differences.
And the thing that I find so fascinating is what you said earlier. It's like the further we got away from the natural component of eating
milk,
not even, you know, just milk, dairy, but where the dairy came from, what the dairy we're eating. And it creates this subtle shift that's now detectable at the level of the individual carbons within the fatty acids. Like, that's mind blowing stuff.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, it's been incredible. And again, you know, it's thanks to dolphins just providing such a clean slate to, you know, reveal the secret to longevity.
Yeah.
They always were smarter than us.
I know. We always knew that. We knew that. Right.
So talk a little bit about the role of iron in this whole kind of conundrum and cellular stability. And is iron something that we should maybe be thinking about when it comes to potential deficiency, of course, but then also excess?
Right. I mean, we hear throughout our whole lives about, you know, iron deficiencies, and that is a very real thing. So that remains something that people should get tested for and treat appropriately under their physician's guidance. What has emerged over the last really 20 years and really in the past 10 is that there is a whole new way that our cells are dying, which was an amazing discovery made by scientists at the University of Columbia back in 2012. So it wasn't that long ago. And, you know, prior to that, there were only three ways that our cells died. And they discovered a fourth way that our cells die, which is, this is just giant discovery.
Right,
and so they called it ferroptosis or ferroptosis. You can call it like a dinosaur or like an English person. So we'll do ferroptosis. But so they coined the term ferroptosis, and what they described was under the microscope, it's very distinct that these cells are dead, but they're intact. The nucleus looks fine, but inside all the mitochondria are dead. And there's little spots of iron inside, and the membrane is a little bit thickened. So it was a mystery to be like, what is this? Where is this happening? Since that publication in 2012, there have been over 10,000 peer-reviewed papers on ferroptosis.
Wow.
So it's now, and now it's being attributed to, again, this rise that we're seeing in type 2 diabetes, fatty liver disease. So you kind of see a pattern happening here, Alzheimer's and others. So there have been all these studies done on ferroptosis, which basically it is when fragile fatty acids in the cell membrane lead to lipid peroxidation that then combine with iron that shouldn't be in that cell, and it creates this massive explosion of reactive oxygen species that then knock out the mitochondria.
Wow.
So it's a very distinct profile. So again, with this paper that we have coming out, what we're proposing is that C15 deficiency syndrome, that part of that syndrome is ferroptosis, that it's because of C15 deficiencies that ferroptosis showed up in the first place.
Hmm.
So we've been able to show through studies over the past decade that when C15 is low, our red blood cells become fragile. They become fragile, our liver ends up engulfing those fragile red blood cells. What's left inside the cells, iron.
Yeah.
So that iron gets deposited, and then now those cells are fragile because we talked about fragile cell membranes without enough C15, sets off lipid peroxidation, ferroptosis, and then that spreads throughout the body.
Mm-hmm.
So what's exciting is that, you know, we have a way to not only now define a C15 deficiency syndrome at its core, but it's fixable. Because importantly, in all of those models, when animals were provided and when models were provided C15, every aspect of ferroptosis and the subsequent diseases were resolved.
Cool.
So, you know, it's again, just something, you know, you always felt like a level of urgency, excitement, but urgency because, you know, we have now 1 in 3 people globally with fatty liver disease, 1 in 10 children.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have an opportunity to take the edge off of a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Cool. I have two things I want to follow up here because you make cell death sound really exciting and dramatic. It's like exploding
I have
cells.
More questions around this.
I'm
too.
Like, whoa, that sounds really cool. So my question is, you know, you're talking about C15, something that we can measure, right, Michael? We just said we can measure it on our essential metabolic fatty acid profile. You can measure C15. But as it relates to ferroptosis or ferroptosis. Does it only happen with iron overload, or can it happen with normal iron levels? Like, if I'm going to measure my cell fragility or stability, I'm going to look at C15, but do I also need to make sure I don't have iron overload, or does that happen regardless?
Yeah, it's a good point, Patty. It's a really good point. So, you know, there's now like a combination of tests that can help you get pretty quickly to at least this world of what we think is happening, and as well as many other papers have published. So, you know, ideally, this combination of events, what you would want to test for are first getting, testing your C15 levels, as we had talked about, through the exciting fatty 15 C15 test, through the metabolic fatty acid panel, and that will tell you this 0.2%, and then above and below that.
Okay.
The second is, and that tests right, is from red blood cells, which is great. The next thing is lipid peroxides. So we talked about that, you know, what sets this up as far as for apoptosis and C15 deficiency is that you have increased lipid peroxidation. So those cell membranes are now fragile, getting attacked by oxygen. The outcome of that are lipid peroxide. So getting those measured can give you insights. The next is your red blood cell panel. So by getting your panel, and that's where the dolphins provided really important insights, that what we saw was that older dolphins had low hemoglobin. So for them, it was anemia. For us, it may be low, but not anemia. But importantly, they had high red blood cell distribution width, this thing called RDW, and high reticulocytes.
Huh.
So it meant their cells, red blood cells, were dying earlier than they should, and therefore their bodies had to keep producing new cells. And that's how you would detect it even before you get anemia. So that combination in the red blood cell index, and then finally ferritin. So ferritin it can be a measurement of inflammation. So you have to be careful that it's not that.
Right.
But in combination with these other things, hyperferritinemia is a great measure, can be a great measurement of iron body stores. Like there's too much iron sitting in your tissues. So that combination can get you and your doctor a lot closer to saying, am I, where am I at in this world of fragility.
No. So get me more C15.
Yes, for sure.
Right? Get me some fatty 15.
Well, and I wanted to follow up one thing on ferroptosis too, because this is just so fascinating to me. The way you described it, it seemed almost like a cellular collapse in a way. And so one of the things I was wondering was, you know, with apoptosis and some of these other cell deaths, there's a huge inflammatory aftermath that happens because all of these things are either released in the system or cells are coming and reacting to maybe whatever caused it and this nature. Is that ferroptosis also cause kind of a downstream inflammatory effect?
It does. I mean, it looks innocent when you're looking at it under the microscope because it's not like, you know, the cell hasn't exploded. It's just sitting there dormant, what appears to be dormant. But we now know that, Michael, just like, you know, you had thought, like it's because you have all these reactive oxygen species, because of lipid peroxidation, because you have these cells that are dying in tissues when they shouldn't have died, that does absolutely induce increased, especially increased pro-inflammatory cytokines. So other things you could test for, IL-6 and TNF-alpha are often tied to this condition. So it sounds like we're coming up with a panel. Cellular stability. I don't know, but you guys should do that.
Yes.
Yes. It's and all of that accelerates aging. And so, you know, if our cells are dying faster than they should, if it's inciting, you know, inflammation, the fact that the mitochondria, we're just basically going down the list of hallmarks of aging.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's part of all of that. And because it's accelerating aging, that is why we're seeing, again, you know, the hypothesis that we're calling this cell stability hypothesis is that as we lose that stability, our aging accelerates, and why younger and younger people are getting old people. Like children should not be getting type 2 diabetes and hypertension,
right,
and liver cirrhosis.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. It's frightening. I think I read something the other day. 12% of children 2 and 5 are now overweight, showing signs of fatty liver.
Wow.
So
it's crazy, and that wasn't the case, right?
Right.
The whole reason why we took butter was taken out of our worlds was because at that time they thought that diabetes was bad and obesity, and it just got worse. You know, and so we're trying to get you know, the world to revisit these nutritional guidelines to be like, hey, the reason why we pulled these things was to improve our health, specifically heart and metabolic, and things aren't looking great. So let's get these good fats back in, but then be able to temper, you know, not ignoring the fact that these even chain saturated fats do have negative effects.
All right. Well, let's talk fatty 15.
Yeah. We've talked about basically what ferroptosis is, the deficiency, and how you can figure out whether, you know, how bad we all are, basically,
right,
via testing. So let's talk about the solution.
So, you know, when we walked through all of the options, and, you know, if this could have been, if we really felt like this could have all been, this could all be solved through eating more butter, you know, Eric, my husband, Navy physician, we would have just stayed in our public health service jobs and, you know, done just been perfectly happy and said, great, we did our job as public servants, which we did for our whole lives. But we came to understand that that pure C15, when the issue with whole fat dairy is that it's combined with all these other pro-inflammatory saturates. And in fact, there was a group of 18 experts who met in Denmark, and they met for 2 days just to talk about whole dairy fat versus individual ingredients. Okay. And at the end of it, they concluded that you cannot get the benefits of individual ingredients in milk that you can get, you know, that you just can't get it as mixed into the milk. You have to have them as individuals. Hmm. So that's not always the case with food. A lot of times it's better to get your nutrients from whole food. This is an exception to that. So we developed a vegan, free fatty acid, readily bioavailable C15 that basically is able to go to work without having to compete against a lot of bullies in the classroom.
Yeah.
They're able to succeed on their own. Yeah. And it really does have a much more potent effect with regard to all of the things that we've talked about, with repairing mitochondria, you know, with improving cellular stability, all of these things then translating to things our doctors care about, improved blood indices. And most importantly, it's to help extend and support long life. So Fatty 15 brought to the world in cooperation and collaboration with the Navy. Wow. To give people an easy way to get C15 back into their lives.
Wow. That's awesome. Awesome. Well, can I say one thing too, and just try to slot it in from a clinical perspective, because we call these things nutraceuticals for a reason, right? Like a nutraceutical is meant to be a more powerful intervention than, say, something in your diet. And maybe perhaps if way back when we would have not raised cattle on corn, and we would have had these different diets, and we would be consuming whole fat, like we used to with the coffee, you take the cream off the top and it sounds delicious. Yep. And doing all those things that we used to do, we wouldn't have perhaps such a needed, we wouldn't be so far off as we are today where we needed something like a nutraceutical. Is that a fair way to kind of slot that in conceptually?
Yeah, it's an absolutely fair way to put it. I think there are different places for, you know, something like Fatty 15, Michael, like you said, it's to compensate for kind of where our world is at today. You know, another way to think about it is, you know, aspirin comes from willow bark, right? And we don't say, I just chew on willow bark and that's how I get my, it's just, this is actually developed and very special to be able to do its job. That said, you know, when we look at a study that was recently done, looking at people who live in high longevity zones versus low longevity zones, so those blue zones, right? Mm-hmm. And it showed that people who live in the high longevity zones, their levels of C15, right? We've talked about this low normal of 0.2, their levels are, and they're 60 to 70, so they're older people, 0.65.
Wow.
C15. And they're taking Fatty 15. So I think it's really going to be, it's about an effort of how do we get Fatty 15 is truly meant to supplement your diet to be able to get it back into your world. And Michael, like you said, in a more potent, effective way. And let's look at our diets and be able to say, how can I get there? Because really that would mean a total of probably about 600 milligrams of C15 per day in the diet for these high longevity zone folks. Wow. So I think it's going to be a combination of, and I don't know, is it sardines?
Maybe. Right.
I was just trying to get you to say I could eat as much butter as I wanted.
I don't know if you're going to say that. I never turn down a pat of butter.
Good for you. Well, I will say, Dr. Stephanie Van Watson, you have made quite the case for C15 and Fatty 15 to the point where I have now a sense of urgency. I need Fatty 15. It's clear. I'm a little bit nervous about this, and I will test it. I will test it just because. But thank you for explaining that, Dr. Stephanie, because that was a phenomenal explanation. And this has been a great time, and we're so profoundly grateful for your time. But before we let you go, We'd have one last question that I'm going to kick to Michael Chapman.
Yeah. We have a silly question at the end that we call the fireball that's supposed to catch you on your toes.
The fireball.
And so this has nothing to do... Well, it does kind of actually
what we were talking about.
I wanted to know, what was the craziest cool thing that you learned about dolphins in your time working with them?
There's so many.
Cool.
But probably one of the coolest is that they have hemispheric sleep. So they sleep one side of their brain at a time, which means that they can stay awake and swimming 24 hours a day. And you'll literally see that the side that's asleep, the eye is closed. Literally sleeping from one side.
Wow.
It's amazing, and it's an amazing survival mechanism out in the wild, you know, because they're protected there at the Navy in San Diego Bay. But if you're a wild dolphin and you just had a baby, you know, you need to.
Yeah.
Mom needs to be awake. Well, I guess we know that too, but we just don't get the hemispheric sleep. So I thought that was a pretty cool trick the dolphins have picked up that we are yet to.
Michael's dying to have that. Michael wants a little dose of hemispheric sleep. Any sleep.
Any sphere. I'll take any sphere. I will say, too, we're also super excited to have been working together. And truth be told, peek behind the curtain, this isn't the first conversation that we've had. Mm-hmm. And it's been really, really great getting to know you guys at Fatty 15 and working on, I guess we can say, this upcoming test that we're putting out, this Fatty 15 test. And so we're super excited about that and even more to come.
Yeah.
So, we're just super, super excited to be working with you guys.
Well, we love the Genova family. Really have enjoyed working, Patty, with you and Michael and the whole team. And you're now part of Team Save the Dolphin, Save the World.
Awesome. We're in. Awesome. We're in. Well, thank you, Dr. Stephanie Van Watson. It's been a pleasure.
Great. Thank you.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I really just kind of wanted some type of approval to eat as much butter as I wanted.
Well, you could still eat butter. She said she's not going to pass it up. But I'm fascinated by this fatty acid. I'm shocked that it's just this one, because we measure fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote the support guide for the fatty acids, and I'm like shocked at all of this new stuff that's coming out about pentadecanoic acid.
Yeah, and really all the fatty acids. It's kind of, I feel like fatty acids and fatty acid testing has been just kind of lingering around for a bit of time and not been as much in focus. And we're learning so much more. And we've known a little bit about the odd chain fatty acids, but not to this degree.
Nope.
And to see some of this literature that's now coming out is super exciting and informative as far as understanding that age old question of like, what am I eating?
Right.
What am I supposed to eat?
And I think it's fascinating, too, where she was talking about how this one fatty acid in isolation is far better than eating the whole food, which is what we're used to. So that's another, like, just a little turn, a little pivot here that we have to really wrap our minds around, but super cool.
Yeah, very cool. I'm going to get some tacos. Next time on The Lab Report, we're going to talk to Shakira Niazi,
founder of Basil Seed Works, and what a story. This woman is an inspiration.
Absolutely, and doing good work for the entire planet.
Correct. You've been listening to The Lab Report. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and leave us a review. To learn more about Genova Diagnostics, visit our website at gdx.net. There you'll find information on specific testing, educational resources, and how to connect with our show. Call us at 1-800-522-4762 or email us at podcast@gdx.net. I did notice when you were explaining the fireball to Stephanie that you said it's used to catch you on your toes. Now, I thought it was catch you off guard or keep you on your toes, but catch you on your toes is an interesting way to explain it, Michael.
Listen, I've got a couple defenses here, okay?
Okay.
One, you may know that I have not been 100% as far as my physical health, as far as a head full of viruses swimming around in my cerebral spinal fluid. I will also say I have never been great at colloquialisms. I tend to generally say them the wrong way almost every time because I don't think I grew up with a ton of colloquialisms.
You're from Indiana where they talk about tacos and sandwiches.
We just don't talk a whole lot.
Yeah, it's not a lot happening out there, but
I'm not big storytellers, you know?
But every time you do like some malapropism, I just kind of chuckle and file it away and just go, Michael, you're going to catch someone on their toes, really? Is that what we're doing?
You know, I hear what you're saying, but I'm just going to take it in stride. I'm going to take it like water off a dog's back.